You may not realize it, but every minute of every day, you're enjoying your First Amendment freedoms. You can wear what you want, give out your opinion for free, even if it's unpopular. Listen to your playlist. You can put a sign out on your front lawn that says, "Vote for Bigfoot, someone you can believe in." Pray to the God of your choice, or don't. You have the right to hang with a posse that thinks like you do. Tell the government what you think about its policies. They're the freedoms that let you be you, and they're all brought to you by the First Amendment. Learn more at freedomforum.org.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly Stewart Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
Manisha, thank you for joining me this morning. How are you doing?
Mike, I'm doing great. Happy to be here with you.
Likewise. Hey, I think we're going to hit a subject that... Well, maybe I speak from personal experience here. A subject that is causing a lot of people anxiety right now. It's been causing them anxiety for you know, probably a majority of their adult life, and that is money.
Yes.
Money. So, you know, you've written your new book, and I'm excited for this. And you talk about this culture of never enough. Really, you know, you talk about healthy spending. What does that really look like? What do you mean by healthy spending?
So I define financial health, which one of the major components of that is your spending, as being able to meet your everyday obligations without any level of stress, knowing you have something set aside for emergencies, and knowing that you're putting something aside for the future for whatever purposes you are interested in doing so. And you'll note that's not a number. I didn't give you a number.
No, it's a good point. Let me ask this then. How do you identify what truly is required for your everyday
life? Yeah.
What gets people in hot water financially?
Perfect follow-up. So my favorite framework and set of numbers is something Elizabeth Warren came up back when she was a bankruptcy professor at Harvard Law. She calls it the balanced spending rule. And it says 50% of your take-home pay goes to needs, 30% to wants, 20% to savings. And when you live in that framework, and it flexes, if you live on the East or West Coast, you'll likely spend more than 50% on your needs. But 50-30-20, that's the way to figure out what your healthy spending looks like for your income level.
Okay, then how do you manage the competing demands on your cash, especially with... seems like everyone is getting into a lot of debt these days, especially those with student loans, which it's been in the headlines, with the president trying to do student loan forgiveness. How do you deal with those competing demands? What's the best advice you give to everyday people like myself?
I remind people that debt is a four-letter word for a reason. Sometimes you use it with good reason. When you are paying down your debt, you are essentially saving. So when you think about that 50-30-20 rule, if you can take aside 20% to make additional payments, whether it's your mortgage, your student loan payments, your car payments, your credit card payments, above and beyond the monthly minimum, you will be amazed, depending on the interest rate, how dramatically it reduces the time to pay that debt back in full.
Smart. Yeah, the 50-30-20 rule it sounds so simplistic in nature, yet so difficult for a lot of people. Does it just come down to simple discipline of budgeting out and actually looking at what you're spending and having the commitment to set, you know, that 20% aside to savings when it immediately comes in?
The simplest way, yes, is to cut that 20% off. Just like the simplest way to exercise is to do it first thing in the morning. But what it really requires is an understanding of the balance between needs and wants, because many of us have confused our, I need a car, but how much of a car do I need? Do I need a car that is $60,000 or do I need a car that's $20,000? And so the exercise, the hard part is not numerical, it's emotional. It's deciding what really is a need and what really is a want, because the wants can be pared back. And the needs, you don't necessarily need to be buying a house and having a huge mortgage. You can rent for a while. There's nothing wrong with renting.
Okay, then this really gets into the culture of never enough. And we are inundated with it. We are, especially with the advent of social media, but it's been around for close to 2 decades now. Everyone shows how much they have, except people don't know how much those people are either in debt and sort of putting off this portrayal of a life that they can't afford. But how do you recommend fighting off that culture of never enough and living within your means?
I think the most important thing is to understand that the vast majority of images that we are seeing, whether it's on social media, whether it's on TV, whether it's what our neighbors are doing, is causing people extreme financial stress. Most people I meet, whether you're making $100,000 a year or $1 million a year, and I'm not kidding, are living beyond their means. And so it all comes back to reassessing, am I using a flawed self-worth anchor, some kind of possession, some, you know, where I go on vacation as a signal for who I am worth? And that's where you can start peeling back the layers and making sure that your enough is what's feeding your soul, not the image you want to project to the outside world.
So in the book, and again, guys, that is Money Zen, the secret to finding your enough. You talk about eradicating this soul-destroying belief, and I love that term, soul-destroying belief, that self-worth equals net worth. But as I read that line, I sort of caught myself that, yeah, I sort of evaluate a person's worth based off their financial wealth as well. And it's not intentional. It's not meant to be demeaning, but we automatically see somebody with a lot of money and say, oh, that must be a great individual. When, let's be honest, I've met a lot of people that are rich in the bank and extremely poor in character. But how do you go about telling your readers how to destroy this, the belief that self-worth necessarily correlates to your net worth?
Yeah. First, let me just say I'm 53 years old and I spent 40 of those 53 years living my life to optimize the equation self-worth equals net worth. And what happens when you do that is you generally end up emotionally bankrupt. So the steps are first understanding what are the factors that led you to tie your self-worth to such a toxic equation. And they're a multifaceted buckets, personal experiences, cultural experience, societal, even evolutionary, biological factors. But understanding how you got to that thinking is the most important step. And then the second step is to replace that yucky equation, self-worth equals net worth, with a much healthier equation. And the one I like to use is financial health plus emotional wealth equals money zen.
So let's get into that. You stole my next question. You said this is the new formula for a rich life. Yeah. And when you say the word rich, you're not talking about, again, the greenback. You're talking about an emotionally and spiritually rich life.
Correct. Although I'm not going to say money doesn't matter. I mean, if you don't have money, you're going to be completely stressed out. What I want people to understand, however, is that, and this is research-based, a new group of professors from Princeton and Penn came together and they identified that there is a certain level of income, and it's different for all of us, but above that level, our happiness will not increase, or life satisfaction will not increase unless it's on a layer of emotional well-being. Numbers different for everyone, but if we ignore the soul, spiritual, happy side of ourselves, money will not fill that hole.
Again, one of the second last concepts I want to talk about, joy-based spending. I love how you phrase that. Please explain that for all of us.
Super. So joy-based spending is all about extracting the maximum amount of joy out of every dollar that you spend. It's the opposite of budgeting, but it actually gets you to the same place. It has three steps. The first one is to do a joy audit. If you can do it for a month, that's optimal. If you only do it for a weekend, all right. Write down everything you spend money on. Do it with pencil and paper so you feel it. When you're done with the period, take out a yellow highlighter, highlight anything you spent money on that didn't bring you happiness. Classic example I see. You go out to drinks with, or go out to dinner with a couple, and they order a super expensive bottle of wine, and you're not drinking. And you split the bill at the end, and no matter how lovely the conversation was, you're seething. Cut that out. Invite them over for a BYOB night at your place. Second step is to use a ruler, and it's a metric. Most of us work about 2,000 hours a year on work-related activities. So if we're earning $100,000 a year divided by 2,000, that's $50 an hour before tax. So now if you see something that costs $500, you do the math. You divide it by 50 and you say, is this worth more than 10 hours of my life's energy? Answer could be yes. Answer could be no. It's up to you. But now you have a ruler. So the financial ruler is the second step. And then the third step is the power of the pause, especially because the internet makes it so easy to buy things quickly. So I encourage people, if it's not an absolute essential, put it in your cart, let it sit there for a week, come back. If it's something in the store, take a photo, let it sit on your phone. You'd be amazed how much leaky money you find when you do these three steps that you then can reallocate to stuff that makes you happier or paying down that debt.
We are a culture of instant gratification, and we call it the 5-minute rule. Just take 5 minutes, go do something else. And if you forget about it, or if you come back, you have a different perspective. So before we close out, I've got two more questions, but this sentence sort of made me pause. It was sort of counter to what I believe, but it said, experience achieving less as a real path to lasting success. You've got to explain this one for me.
Yeah. When I first heard that phrase, achieve less, I wanted to dry heave. I mean, like, nothing in my life has ever been about achieving less. And what I've come to realize is that we so idolize being busy, and there's more stimuli coming into our lives than ever before in history, that we have to cut things out. And using the term achieve less is very jarring. And it's jarring for a purpose, because a lot of us are striving for goals or projects that actually, when we step back and we ask ourselves, for what am I doing this? The answer very well might be for no good reason. And so when I say achieve less, I'm not saying be a sloth and sit on the sofa. What I'm saying is give yourself permission to live at the same time that you are doing activities that nourish you professionally and personally.
Yeah, I guess I probably need to take a taste of that medicine. For those listeners, one, pick up the book, Money's End, The Secret to Finding Your Enough, and the fact that it provides an actionable roadmap to sort of eliminating these self-sabotaging efforts. But for someone who's living in the fast lane, it seems like all of us are because of social media. And as you said, all these the stimuli being thrown at us nonstop. What are sort of your top three rules? One, I know we talked about the 50-30-20 I'd love that. I've heard something very similar to that before, but what are your top three rules for you personally when it comes to spending and finding happiness, not only within your money, but outside of your money?
Yeah, so the first thing I like to do is periodically ask myself, if $50 million dropped on my head after tax and on the same day I got a diagnosis that I'm going to die in 5 years, what would I stop doing and what would I start doing? And that will lead you to some very fascinating answers if you go deeper in that. So that's the one tool I love. Another tool I love is when I'm feeling discombobulated. So many of us buy things when we're feeling emotionally unsettled, whether it's stress from work or exhaustion from, you know, building our businesses or our careers. So I like to ask the question, to whom or what do I need to connect in this moment to move myself one step closer to happiness? Because oftentimes our finances get in the toilet because we're spending them on things, we're spending our money on things to make us happy, when really it might be connection to another human being or connection to ourselves, a moment of silence. And then the third and final tool that I recommend that people use is something I learned from small children under the age of 3. You talk to them, they'll ask you why, and then why, and then why. And fascinatingly, they will get you down so far in that subject matter that oftentimes you'll be like, you know what? I don't know the answer why. And so that's the question that we need to ask ourselves if something is stressing us out. And we are, particularly when we're feeling financially stressed.
That is beautiful. We can learn from 3-year-olds. Absolutely. Manisha, I can't thank you enough. I'm looking forward to picking up the book again for the viewers. Money Zen, The Secret to Finding Your Enough. I think, for the listeners, it's undeniable that money is probably one of the largest sources of our anxiety and our problems in our life. Again, I've met a lot of people that are rich in the bank and poor in character. It does not define who you are, especially in this down economy. You know, I can't thank Manisha enough for giving us a few tips to reevaluate our relationship with money and how we utilize it, both for the good and our future. Manisha, thank you so much. And where can people find you? Do you have a personal website?
I do. I like to keep things simple. So my whole life is at moneyzen.com. Learn about the book, find my social accounts, etc.
Okay. So moneyzen.com. We'll drop that within the article. And for everyone, Manisha, I can't thank you enough for your time. And for everyone, thanks for listening. Please go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to this platform, and leave a review. We actually do read them, and it's the mechanism for which we get better. So I appreciate it. All right. Thanks, y'all.
You may not realize it, but every minute of every day, you're enjoying your First Amendment freedoms. You can wear what you want, give out your opinion for free, even if it's unpopular. Listen to your playlist. You can put a sign out on your front lawn that says, "Vote for Bigfoot, someone you can believe in." Pray to the God of your choice, or don't. You have the right to hang with a posse that thinks like you do. Tell the government what you think about its policies. They're the freedoms that let you be you, and they're all brought to you by the First Amendment. Freedom, moving like a river in my soul. Learn more at freedomforum.org.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.